Before we have the moment of silence followed by the serenity prayer, I'd like to introduce myself. My name is Linda, and I'm a member of Al-Anon.
And I'm Scott. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous.
And we're here to have a workshop on relationships. And this is 10 o'clock at night in a casual setting, and that's how we hope that the workshop's going to be. A sharing of coming together, speaking the language of the heart. Some areas have a moment of silence before the serenity prayer. And our co-founder of Al-Anon, Lois Wilson, who was married to Bill, someone asked her what she did in that moment of silence before the serenity prayer, and she said, "I invite God to the meeting." So in our moment of silence, if you'd be willing to ask the God of your understanding, your high power, to come be here, just so this room would be filled with love and understanding, so that Scott and I may get touched in the heart, so our words come out, and we just come together. So a moment of silence, and be willing to ask the God of your understanding. The serenity prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Again, welcome to a workshop on relationships. Scott and I would like to tell you that we are not experts. I think I am not an expert at all as far as relationship goes. That's why I qualify for Al-Anon. But we have considered something. I have been married. This is my third marriage. I call Scott my wonderful now and forever husband. I'm his second wife. And we've considered adding up all of the years we've been married, not to each other, and having like a total, and having like a 175th wedding anniversary or something, you know. Seemed like a good idea at the time. So what you're going to hear from us tonight is just our experience of working our programs as a husband and wife. And it doesn't have to be relationships just like that. My wonderful father-in-law that I did not get to meet, because he'd already passed when I came into Scott's life, but I get quotes from Scott about this wonderful Mr. Lee all the time. And he said, human beings are herd animals that we like to hang out together. And that must be true, because here we are at a conference of several hundred people. I don't know what the final count is, but I think it's probably close to 1,000 or so. So we do. We live in cities. We live in communities. We join clubs. We go to meetings. And we get stuck in traffic together, okay? So we are human beings that are walking the earth with other human beings. So as far as relationship goes, it doesn't have to be just a boy-girl thing. It can be when you're buying your burger at McDonald's, or it can be when you're stopping to fill up with gas. And so our part of the relationship is to make this world a friendlier place by having more gentle and more friendly relationships. And what we're going to do is we're going to go through the traditions. And I'm going to read the Al-Anon tradition, and Scott is going to read the AA tradition, and we're going to find out that it's going to work okay. Now, pre-assigned ahead of time, Scott says, you take the odd numbers. Because it's Al-Anon. You get the odd tradition.
You get the odd Al-Anon tradition.
I get the odd Al-Anon tradition. So that's what this is going to be. It's going to be casual. Anything else as far as the opening that you wanted to say?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that the first lie I ever believed was, and they all live happily ever after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to release my, you know, my grip on that old lie, and to understand that a relationship isn't about happily ever after. It's about a committed framework within which people can grow. I have a relationship with our children. I have a relationship with the men I sponsor. These things apply in large measure to all of those relationships.
Okay. The 12 traditions of Al-Anon have this little jump start paragraph that says, these guidelines are a means of promoting harmony and growth in the Al-Anon groups and in the worldwide fellowship of Al-Anon as a whole. Our group experience suggests that our unity depends upon our adherence to these traditions. So in this little paragraph, it uses the words harmony and growth. And what relationship, any relationship, wouldn't it be more comfortable if it had harmony and growth in it? I mean, isn't that what we're kind of here to learn about, how to live more gently with each other? And as far as the harmony and growth, I'd like to, we will tell several true stories, and we want you to know that this is not gossip or taking somebody else's inventory. All of the personal examples we use, we have the people's permission to use them. So I want to tell you one of my favorite stories about harmony and growth about this couple. It was before they got into AA, into Al-Anon, and things were pretty bad in that household. And Christmas was coming up, and the wife was determined that this was going to be a changing of the season, that they were going to get their life together, and that she looked around and she found the perfect Christmas present for her husband. She bought it, and she wrapped it up, and she put it under the tree, and she was so excited. Because things were really bad in their house. They were both going toward their AA and Al-Anon and pre-Al-Anon bottom. So things were looking really bad in this household. But Christmas was coming up, and she's going to save the day because she found the perfect Christmas present for him. A couple of days later, his present to her showed up under the tree, and she was amazed. It was the same size. And she picked it up, and it was the same weight. And all of a sudden she realizes that he must have gotten her the very same thing for Christmas, that they really are going to be together in this. They really are going to have a new life, and it's all going to be changed. And as Christmas gets closer, she keeps looking at these two packages, and she just knows that they've given each other the very same thing for Christmas. So Christmas morning comes, and it's time to open the presents. She's so excited. She says, "Honey, let's just rip the paper off at the same time." He goes, "Okay." So they ripped the paper off at the same time. She had given her husband a wonderful, nice, hardback copy of the Bible. He had given her The Joys of Sex. But it was the beginning of harmony and growth in their family because they eventually got into AA and to Al-Anon. So the first tradition here in Al-Anon says, number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal progress for the greatest number depends upon unity. What I love about this tradition is the word common welfare. When Scott and I started dating, started courting, well, I should tell you that we had known each other for several years, but not on a friendly, any kind of friendship basis. In my early Al-Anon, I was encouraged to go to open AA meetings. So I've been going to Scott's home group for almost as long as I've been going to Al-Anon. I've been in Al-Anon about 18 years, and this was over 10 years ago. So I've been going to this open AA meeting. And I had been married, divorced, and balance had come back into my life thanks to Al-Anon, but I was lonely. And I really didn't think that I'd ever get married again because marriage had not shown me anything too pleasant. Marriage had meant unhappiness, it had meant power play, it had meant my doing a lot of the responsibilities of running the household and bringing the finances in. So I was an adult, my girls were grown, I'm traveling, I've got balance in my life, so I didn't think there was any reason why I should get married. But I was lonely. So on my knees I said a prayer, "God, I need to tell you that I'm lonely." I didn't ask for anything, I just said I'm lonely. And I shared that prayer with my girlfriend, and she said, "Well, didn't you know that Scott's divorce is going to be final in a couple of days?" And I said, "Scott's divorce? I didn't even know he's having any trouble." And she says, "Where have you been? He hasn't lived in his household for almost 3 years." And I thought, that was just information I wasn't supposed to have, you know. So now I've said my prayer, and I found out that this man that I'd seen in meetings, I thought he was very handsome, still do, and I loved what he had to share, and I'm thinking, he's going to be single, And so, again, I started obsessing on some that information, and I must have changed my behavior, because I'm leaving the meeting one day, this open AA meeting, and Scott steps right in front of me, and he says, "Can I ask you a question?" And I said, "Well, sure." He says, "Have I done something to offend you?" And I said, "Well, no, why do you ask?" And he said, "Well, you don't go to lunch with us anymore. You don't say hello. You don't say goodbye. It's a very, very huggy meeting. You don't hug. And I just wondered if I'd done something to offend you." And I said, "No." I said, "I found out that you were going to be single, and I'm interested." And he said, "Oh."
That's exactly the way it happened.
And he stepped out of the way, and I bolted from my car. And I called my sponsor. It was before cell phones. I had to wait till I got home, and I said, you know, there he said something. I wish I'd been clever, and all I did was say, I'm interested. And she says, I think it's going to be okay because you told the truth. And in the truth, when Scott was totally single, totally divorced, he did call me up and ask me out. And I thought at the time he'd probably ask a lot of people out. But I wasn't the first person he asked out. I was the second person, right? Yeah, we can say that. That's the step, yeah. Well, what happened was he called and asked me out for a date on Saturday night, and then a couple of days later he called and asked me out for a date on Friday night. I thought, well, that seems kind of unusual. But then it dawned on me that somebody must have canceled for Friday night. I actually met this woman later and sent her a thank you note because it worked out great for us. And so back to this common welfare thing. So we started dating, which meant we'd go for coffee and go to a meeting, or we'd go to a meeting and then go for coffee, you know. And sometimes we'd go to a movie. We'd go to our wonderful place that we love, which is the Bluebird Cafe there in Nashville, Tennessee. You can hear some great music there. And there came a time that we were just dating whoever, but we really didn't date anybody else. For some reason, I'm not doing this well about this courting thing all of a sudden. So we started courting, and we got into a committed relationship. And the common welfare that I needed, we started putting understandings together, okay? Not rules, not ultimatums, not, maybe they were called a declaration of boundaries. Some things were totally unacceptable to me. And once we got in a committed relationship, I needed to let Scott know what the deal killers were. And one of the deal killers for me was, this is before we were engaged and before we were planning on getting married. This is just when we were not dating anybody else and we were in a committed relationship. One of my greatest fears that I have to overcome all the time is the fear of abandonment. You know, the disease has taken a lot of things from me. And I would always be in a relationship, but I would leave my shoes at the back door, my running shoes at the back door, because I knew he was going to leave eventually. So I'd leave my shoes there, so I thought I could pick the time that I could have my pain, so I'd put my running shoes on and I would get out of there. See, I knew he's going to leave, but I wanted to be the first one out, so I knew when I was going to hurt, so I could control my own pain. And so our agreement, our understanding was, in this relationship, if either one of us wanted out, we would simply come to the other person and say, this is not working for me, and I need to get out of this relationship. We would not act out. We would not sabotage the relationship. We would not misbehave to push the other person away. We would trust that we were both adults, and we would just say for our common welfare, this is not working for me, and I need to leave. And that helped me so much because that allowed me to be in the relationship. If I could trust that he was going to verbalize that to me and let me take care of myself with my sponsor and with my program, then I didn't have to worry about my running shoes at the back door anymore. I trusted him to be an adult. The other word that I love in this tradition is the word unity. I talked earlier today about our marriage, our relationship is like that of railroad track. We are separate rails. But if you stand in the middle of a railroad track, if you've ever done that as a kid, it looks like those rails actually touch each other, but they never do. You move on down the railroad track, and that vision, that optical illusion, it looks like they come to the same point, but they never do. So what that is we're separate rails, but we have a shared vision. Our shared vision is just about everything in our lives. It's our belief that God comes first, that program comes second, and each of us comes third, and sometimes that gets changed around, and we'll talk about that more in some of the other traditions. But with this being separate rails, we're not one body with two heads on it. I'd always just Velcro in a relationship. You know, I never did allow the other person to be who they were. So we have the railroad ties that connect us. That's our common things that we like to do, such as fishing, being grandparents together, going to meetings together, hanging out at conferences together. We have those things that keep us connected, and we have the shared vision, but we're two independent people. Scott just reminded me that we, when I started looking at this word relationship, because of my past experience, every time I saw the word relationship, I thought of the Titanic, you know, that it was going to sink. So I started telling us, because we do like to fish and canoes, I said, we're not going to have a relationship, we're going to have a relation canoe, you know. And what happens in a canoe is you kind of have to be going in the same direction. Even if it spins around, you're both going in the same direction together. You have to let each other know if you're going to stand up or if you're going to get out, because you'll turn the canoe over if you don't. So a relation canoe works pretty well for us. So I guess that's part of our common welfare, is it's a canoe instead of a ship.
Yeah, it is. To talk a little bit about unity in the first tradition, part of what we do for unity is we get up in the morning at the same time and we go to bed at the same time. And that's been important for us. I have this particular watch here. It's not, I don't think, terribly attractive, but it's extremely functional. I've already set it for tomorrow morning. It has multiple alarms on it. The second alarm is set for the get-up time. The first alarm tomorrow is set 12 minutes before that. It runs anywhere from 10 to 20, depending. And when the first alarm goes off, Linda and I cuddle. We do our morning prayers in each other's arms. If you can come up with a better way to start your day, call me Colette, because I want to hear it. That's a fabulous way to get your day started. And I will grant you that sometimes the second alarm awakens one or both of us. I give you that. That happens. But the 11th step doesn't say achieve through prayer and meditation. It says sought. And on those mornings where the second alarm awakens us both, we sought. And that was our mission. It's a fabulous way to start your day. So we get up and we go to bed at the same time. We have no closed subjects. There's nothing we can't talk about. Now, occasionally, it's happened maybe four or five times in the 12 years we've been together. Mm-hmm. We'll come up across something we need professional help on. We're willing to do that. But we don't have any closed subjects. I don't take sponsor check-in calls after 7 o'clock at night. And then I sponsor know that I'm easily accessible all day long. And you don't have to call me at 8:45 at night to tell me you're doing fine. I take emergencies 24 hours a day, but I don't take check-in calls after 7. That's my family's time. That's just how I do it. We also have something Linda calls a couple update. It would look like a date to you. We start Wednesday afternoons at 3:30. That's our time. And the men I sponsor know that I will only take emergencies from 3:30 Wednesday afternoon until about 8 o'clock on Thursday morning. We're privileged to do this quite a bit, so we don't have a lot of weekends. And it's something we do that helps us stay together. And sometimes we'll grocery shop or something like that, but we don't visit family. As she mentioned, fish. My wife loves to fish. She's extremely good at it. I'm proud of that. She catches more and bigger than I do. People ask me how I like that. I say I love it because that means I get to go. And,
at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, yeah. I got up. A man my age will on occasion get up around 0400. And a summer or two ago, I did that, crawl back in bed, and she cuddled up behind me and said, you know, we're already awake. We should go ahead and go fishing. And 30 minutes later, I had the motor running on the boat. Mm-hmm. We had that shared vision she talked about. We're going to get to it at the very end of this thing. It's talking about how we developed a shared vision in about 20 different life areas so that we're not only on the same page, we're on the same pages. And we've just done that process again. I'm going to read tradition too. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God who may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are the trusted servants. They do not govern. When we talk about a trusted, loving God, it has to be that way. We had a ceremony where we were married in God's presence. We also did our own ceremony where we offered God our relationship, our relation canoe. We also had one. We have a room in our house we call the meditation room. We offered God the house and the yard. I was going to say the grounds, but that misleads you, the yard. And yeah, and everything that we have. And we've recently just purchased another home, a vacation kind of cabin thing on a river about an hour west of Nashville. And we had a ceremony out there where we did the same thing. But we invite God into everything that we do. And I think it's really important. I had an experience with a good friend of mine, a young fellow that I sponsor, spoke in my home group not too long ago, and he said that he'd just come back from his grandfather's funeral. And he told his grandmother at the funeral, because it struck him, he said, "You were a fabulous wife for my grandfather." And she said, "I should have been. I prayed to be that every day." And it struck me. And without saying anything to anyone, I began the next morning, and I added to my morning prayers, I asked God to help me treasure Linda today. I don't think I've missed a day on that recently. I don't think I've missed a day on that since I started it. And the word treasure is frequently used in English as a noun, but not that often as a verb. So it's kind of rare, and I'm making the point. Within 2 weeks, I was walking through the house and heard her on the phone telling someone, "Scott treasures me." It is astonishing. It's always about me getting to the right questions. When I ask God for what he wants me to have, I get a lot of help. It's always about me getting to the right question. And that's one that has just paid really great dividends for us. Part of what we do also, and this is at random, is that we pray for particular people. After we've gotten in bed at night, we'll say, "Let's have a prayer session. Let's pray for," and we pick someone, maybe a family member, someone we know that's having some trouble. We got one that needs it tonight, and we'll be doing some prayer time for them. And so we congregate, the two of us, in prayer. That's part of what our Relation Canoe is about prayer. I didn't tell you in the morning, after we get up and get cleaned up, we also have another meditation session that we do together. If you happen to see us at a meal, you'll see us hold hands and bow our heads. We say grace together 3 times a day, and then we pray at night. We pray together 5 or 6 times a day. That's what this thing is about for us. We have to keep the spiritual in the front, because if we don't, well, I can't speak for her. If I don't, I get into all kinds of trouble. It just doesn't work. Also having to do with this one is that we compliment each other, and it has to be true, but we compliment each other very frequently. And we say thank you. And I would tell the story a number of years ago. On a Christmas day, we ran out of milk. So at halftime, I hopped in the car, raced down to the convenience store, and grabbed a gallon of milk. And as I approached the counter, I received a gift. You don't know when they're coming. And the gift was that this part of me saw a human being standing behind a counter in a convenience store on Christmas day, probably working for minimum wage. And what a gift that was for me. And I said to him, "Thank you for working on Christmas Day. I bet there's some place you'd rather be, but you see, my family ran out of milk, and if you hadn't come to work, I couldn't get it. I really appreciate it." It broke me up, and I cried, and so did he. And it helped me learn that I need to be thanking people. And when we get on, everything we do tomorrow, when we leave here, we'll thank all the airline employees that we deal with. We'll thank the rental car people who are working on the weekend. I don't think I've ever been overthanked. Have you? I always thank Linda when she does my laundry. She thanks me when I take her out for lunch. I still can't get over that. It's overwhelming. So being polite, she talked about it earlier, is so powerful. God's will for me was defined on page 133 in the text, where it says we're sure God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. Well, free had to come first. I had to get free before I could be happy and joyous. And getting the 12 steps and actually doing them, getting them in place, was the beginning of that teaching.
In the second tradition, my words that I like to emphasize are, of course, the loving God. And I had to go through the steps before I could find the loving God. You know, in the steps, it calls it higher power, then the God of our understanding, and then God. And by the time we get traditions, the loving God. And the reason I needed a loving God is because I was going through life, and I was doing some scary things, like eventually going into a bedroom with this man. And I believe that that's a very special time between a man and a woman. But I had used the bedroom very inappropriately in relationships. I'd used it to control and reward and manipulate. That may sound familiar. So when it came time...
Punish.
That's why I can punish. And so when it came time for us to be an adult and go into the bedroom and celebrate our love, I had some real problems with that. I had some things happen to me as a young girl, some things that sometimes happen in alcoholic homes that I had to have professional attention to help me get through that I no longer am a victim. You know, I don't even have to dwell on that anymore. because I know as a victim I had the power to change how I felt and thought about those things that happened to me. But some of the old ghosts would show up. And so with this loving God, I said, I need to have a bedroom prayer. So before Scott and I are going to have a physical exchange, I simply say this prayer. God, help me stay in the moment. That's it. That's my bedroom prayer. And what that prayer does, it keeps me in the moment and it keeps me from thinking about all the other times that I've been inappropriate as far as the bedroom's concerned. It also keeps me from wondering about, is it really going to be okay in the morning? And it keeps me in the moment, and Mother Nature takes care of the rest. That's just my bedroom prayer. Thank you, husband. Thank you so much for that. The reason it's so good to have a bedroom prayer is that it means that we have an open communication as far as sex is concerned, okay? Let's go ahead and call it what it is. Love making, whatever you want to call it. But we have understandings around that also. And we take God into every room of the house, into the kitchen, we pray before meals, as Scott said, and into the bedroom. It's really a wonderful and loving thing when you have a loving God that you can take into all parts of your life with you. The second thing on that, on this one, is about our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. And what I think this is such a strong Al-Anon statement. The thing about trust is I didn't trust. I didn't trust people. I didn't trust men. I didn't even trust my own decision-making because I had made some very poor choices in my lifetime before Scott and I came together. And so trust had to be something that had to be built again. And trust came from doing things by being trustworthy, by showing up for my commitments at my Al-Anon group, by showing up at meetings. I watched Scott make commitments and then follow through with them. So I was able to trust him. In Al-Anon, we say, trust the actions and not the words. So I could watch his actions and know that he was consistent. He did not act at meetings one way and then come home and kick the dog. He was consistent in all of his life experiences. And so that allowed me to trust him. And the way we work out this, our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. In Al-Anon, it gets real tricky. When do I get into our household business, or when do I get into Scott's business, or when do I stay on my side of the street and keep my side of the street clean? One way we do this, we have an AA telephone line coming into our house, and we have an Al-Anon phone line coming into our house. We get separate phone calls, and that works pretty well. But the other thing that I use, that I take from Al-Anon as far as a relationship's concerned, and if I know that I'm about to get into some of Scott's business, I look at that step 10, and I don't want to have to make amends on some of my behavior. So I take an inventory before I do the action. For example, the grocery store doesn't order bread after they've already run out. They take the inventory and they order the bread ahead of time. So if I'm getting ready to do something and I'm wondering if I'm going to have to make amends for it later, if it's really my stuff or Scott's stuff, I ask myself and Alan on what we call the three was it. Was it requested? Was it necessary? And was it appreciated? If I'm getting ready to do something, I have to figure out if Scott asked me to do it. Like if he says, would you pick up the dry cleaning? That doesn't give me permission to go through all the pockets that he has, you know, the things that I used to do, catch up on everything about him just because he asked me to pick up the dry cleaning. So he says, I'm really busy. So it was necessary. And after I pick up the dry cleaning, he says, thank you. So those was it are, was it requested, was it necessary, and was it appreciated? And if I ask those questions before I take an action, then I don't have to go back and make amends for it. An AA friend gave me two other questions. He says, before I'm getting ready to do something, to know that I'm a trusted servant, that I'm not trying to govern somebody else's life, he says, I ask myself these two things. I'm getting ready to do something, I ask myself, can I afford it? And he says, I don't mean financially. I mean spiritually. Can I spiritually afford to get ready to do what I'm thinking about doing? And the second thing he asks himself, he says, will it harm anyone? So that's a way of taking the inventory before you get yourself into trouble and have to make amends. The next tradition is number 3. The relatives of alcoholics can gather together for mutual aid, may call themselves an Al-Anon family group, provided that, as a group, they have no other affiliation. The only requirement for membership is that there be a problem of alcoholism in a relative or friend. No other affiliation? I am married to Scott, and I am married to him all the time. I'm a very friendly person, but I do not flirt. I do not carry on emotional affairs. I give him all the attention that he deserves as a loving husband. We are sometimes going different ways, so we don't really have meals together at night all that much, but we have breakfast together. That's just the way our lifestyle works out. Scott's office is in our home, so we don't just get up and have cereal every day. Sometimes we have toast, sometimes we have burnt toast, sometimes we have eggs. So I look around to see what I can do to give mutual aid as far as the relationship is concerned. How can I make his day more pleasant? Not by controlling, not by getting into his business, but how can I just do a kindness? And I discovered this when my daughter was going to Alateen and we'd have to drive 30 miles. She was so angry at everything when she was in Alateen. We'd have to drive 30 miles to an Alateen meeting and then we'd drive 30 miles home. And that ended up, and we'd pass three other meetings before we'd get to the one that she wanted to go to. She was making it as difficult as possible for us to get her to this Alateen meeting. But what I know about that is that time driving back was some of the best times that we ever had. And so what I knew about mutual aid was I would look at that daughter and I would say, I love you in my mind and in my heart, but not out loud. I go around Scott and sometimes I just say with my eyes, I love and care about you. I don't verbalize it. I just constantly send positive energy, mutual aid to him. Sometimes I give him a touch on the shoulder. It's not about the physical thing. It's just about a loving touch, a healing touch. And that's the way I do with other people. The women that I sponsor, they know that I greet you with a hug. And when we say goodbye, I give you some kind of touch. I give you mutual aid because I continue to give you positive energy. When Scott is getting ready to, we send a love ahead of time to someplace. Like if he's going to have a big business meeting at 2 o'clock on Monday afternoon, at 2 o'clock Monday afternoon, I stop what I'm doing and I say a little prayer for whatever he's going through. Before we came to this room tonight, we sent some love here so some love would be here when we got here. Okay? You can use that mutual aid in an extended way besides just obvious things.
That sending love is part of something we do every morning, send love to the places you're going to be all day. If you haven't tried that, try something fun. Linda's talked in her talk that we don't work each other's programs, but we have agreed to both have a positive response, and we both have permission to ask these two questions. One is, how long has it been since you've been to a meeting? And she has asked me that question on one or two occasions, and my response is, I will go to the next one, and I go. And I will never be offended by that. I've agreed to that. The other one is, would you be willing to talk to your sponsor about that? And we do that one on occasion. They're pretty far apart. But it keeps us from working each other's programs, and I think that's important. I'm free to stay in this relationship, which means I'm also free to go. I'm free to go, which means I'm free to stay. You have to have both. Mm-hmm. You have to have both to be free. And I would say, too, that my priority is not what I say it is. My priority is what I do. If I wonder what my priorities are, I don't listen to my words about the future. Look at my actions in the recent past. What was accomplished was a priority. What was not accomplished is not a priority. And anything that I say to the contrary is a lie that I'm telling me. And I didn't like that when I first heard it. And yet I can look back on today and say that my priorities were recovery and my relationship with my wife today. Because that's what I did things about today. That's how I know. Tradition 4, each group should be autonomous in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Autonomous means I looked it up. It says having the right or power of self-government, self-contained. It means I don't give what belongs to her to someone else, physical or emotional. I tell her when I'm going to be something. I have a family member that's pretty tough to be around. This particular person's sickness is a good bit stronger than my recovery. and yet I'm necessary for me to be around them for occasion. On occasion, I always tell Linda ahead of time. Not only does she pray for me and send me love when I get there, but I, when I come home, weird as a football bat, she doesn't take it personally, and she does what she calls hold the space. And I do that for her in similar situations, so that neither one of us is touchy. And I think it's important that we don't be touchy. And when I say I don't give what's hers to anyone else, that means I don't get involved in emotional affairs. I will not listen to another woman complain about her man. I will not listen to it. That's the beginning of an affair. And if that gets started in front of me, I say, you need to talk to him about it, or your sponsor, or your therapist, but I'm not an appropriate person for this. I'm sorry. And I get away from it. Keeps me out of a lot of trouble. The other thing is about news. I learned this from Linda. Her younger daughter was living with us when we first got married, and she was in college, and I came home early one afternoon, and the kid was just bubbling over. She'd made the dean's list. I was on the dean's list myself, but it was not the same list. And she was so excited about it. I talked to Linda twice on the phone from the time of getting that news before Linda got home, and didn't tell her. Because it wasn't my news. It wasn't my news. So I've learned to honor that. Whose news is it? I don't need to be telling it. And the other thing is that Linda deserves to get my news first. I fancied myself, you don't know yet, but I'm a former Air Force pilot. And I've got a few stories. And fancied myself a writer. Well, it turned out I'm not. I'm a storyteller, but I'm not a writer. But I wrote a novel about flying. And the second I finished it, it was kind of funny, the phone rang, it was a guy's sponsor. I said, I just finished my book. And something didn't feel right, and I realized what it was. And that's that Linda deserved to hear my news first. I have to be really careful. I've got something important going on in my life. She needs to hear it from me, and she needs to hear it first.
Tradition number 5. Each Al-Anon family group has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps of AA ourselves, by encouraging and understanding our alcoholic relative, and by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics. That's a very wonderful and long tradition. It also gives me permission to read the big book, I say, because it says, by practicing the 12 steps of AA ourselves. That's just my own personal opinion. But how do we help families of alcoholics? How do we take that into this? We do not sponsor the man. Scott does not sponsor the man, and I don't sponsor the woman. We have found that that doesn't work for us. We will sit down with a couple and talk to them at, like, over coffee or something. We do this as far as budgets are concerned. We do this as far as play is concerned, and so far as our one couple retreat is concerned. But we found out that it doesn't really work for us to help families by he's sponsoring the guy and I'm sponsoring the woman. That just doesn't seem to work. The interesting thing about how we help families, this is another true story. I heard about this meeting. It was somewhere out west, and a newcomer came in, and it was a smaller meeting. You know it's a newcomer because we all know each other's faces, and we know each other's stories, and we know each other's names of their pets. So this young woman came in. She was just gorgeous. And she sat through the whole meeting, and she didn't ask anything. She didn't cry. She just sat there. But in our closing, it says, whatever your problems, there are those among us who've had them too. That's very much a part of Al-Anon, how we help other families. So after it was over, running and greeting the newcomer, and said, is there anything you'd like to ask? And she said, well, I heard you say, whatever your problem, there are those among us who've had them too, and I have a problem. And we go, well, sure, we can help you. You know, we've been through divorce. We've been through medical things, we've been through courts, you know, whatever it is, I know we can help you. And she says, well, I have this problem. She said, my husband is in treatment, and 2 days ago his prize bull was struck by lightning and he's laying dead in our front yard, and I don't know what to do with it. None of us had ever had that problem before. And so we immediately said, well, have a barbecue, you know. But what she was really saying is we listened long enough, and she said, you know, he's in treatment, the prize bull got struck by lightning, and somehow it's going to be my fault, and I'm going to get blamed for it. And I think what this tradition says is how we give comfort and understanding is that we know that we don't have the power. to have a bull struck by lightning. It goes back to that's how we find out that we're just human beings doing human relationships. And the other way that I personally give Scott comfort is I think that I kind of bring into our relationship that you have to lighten up a little bit. Because he was in the military, he operates by checklist as far as a pilot's concerned, and then I come into his life and I'm going, let's just see what happens about lightening up. And a couple examples of that were, we have a place 450 miles away down in the Florida Panhandle, and we had 4 days to go on a holiday, and we really needed this holiday. But 450 miles means you're going to drive down there a day, you're going to have 2 days there, and then you're going to drive back. And we'd already put some stuff in the car that night, and we're going to get up early that next morning, and we're laying there trying to go to sleep so we can hurry and start our holiday the next morning. And I said to him, what if we don't go? And he said, what, don't go on our vacation? I said, no, what if we don't go on the long trip? What if we just stay right here in Nashville, Tennessee, we don't drive down there, we still act like we're on vacation. A lot of people come to Nashville and they go on vacation. Why don't we just try it? So we picked up 2 extra days. We went to different meetings because that's what we do on vacation. We went to movies and we ate out a lot. And what that was, it gave Scott comfort because he was going to have to do all that driving and he was very, very tired. Another time we were going on that trip and it was really long. We started out in the daytime. It was raining. We had a canoe that kept falling off. I mean, it was really a rough time. And all of a sudden, we find ourselves in a silent car with anger building up. And I don't do that anymore. I live that way, and I choose not to live that way. To me, a silent anger is inappropriate. It's too frightening to me. So he's having this really rough drive, and he's white knuckling it. And it wasn't personally, but it was just the situation. We were hungry, angry, lonely, and tired, and it was getting grim. And so I said, God, I really need some help here. And I was given this little thought, and I said, would you like to play Recovery Trivial Pursuit? And he said,
what's that?
And I said, I don't know, but I think it looks like this, that I'll say a slogan, and you say a slogan, and I'll say one back, and we just bat them back and forth. So I started saying, one day at a time. And
he, eating me.
Yeah, and I say, easy does it. He said, call your sponsor. I mean, 999 slogans later, or things we've heard at meetings later, we are laughing and the miles are flying away. We just have to do things a little bit differently, with a little more gentleness and humor.
We have, I think there are 4 commitments for this relationship we're in to be working. I'm committed to my growth. I'm committed to her growth. She's committed to her growth. She's committed to my growth. That's 4, and they're separate. And that includes the fact that I'm going to hurt her. Not intentionally. That's part of it. She's going to hurt me. It's a given. That's part of the growth process. That's what we're here for. What's important is to maintain the commitment to all 4. And I'm not, at this point, whacking on my previous wife. I did a lot of things to make her very sick, okay? Please. I'm not taking her inventory. But the relationship I came out of, I was committed to my growth. She was committed to my growth. I was committed to her growth, and she was just fine, thank you very dadgum much, and leave me alone. And that didn't work. And that did not work. So I think it requires 4 commitments. So part of that commitment means that when we sit down, this one happened, we sit down, we've been apart. Sometimes, you know, I'm at a conference, and she's at another one, whatever. We've got our date night. We're sitting down to attend like dinner, and the Elon phone rings. And she answers it. And she takes the call in the other room. And I sit there with a smile on my face and eat my candlelight dinner by myself because I know I trust her judgment and I'm committed to her growth. And I know if this was not an emergency, she would not be taking the call. That is part of my commitment to her growth, is that I'm not walking around as raw meat and I trust her judgment. I know that I'm important to her. That's an important one to me. I never question her motives. I do a lot of jail stuff. It's important to me to carry the message into the jail. I've never been arrested, but it feeds my spirit. And someone asked her one time, and I was interested to hear the answer. What asked Linda, what do you think about all the time Scott spends in the jail? She said, I love it, because I love who he is when he comes out of there. So see, I get the gift. I'm going to talk about that some tomorrow morning, but it's so important that we support each other that way, and that's what we do. The next two traditions, and I'm not going to read them, but they deal with finance, and I'm going to talk about that. We discuss money. I'm going to tell you right now, we have the same number in our minds and it's a spending limit. And neither one of us will spend more than this given number without talking to the other person. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't get a new sport coat when I need one. It means she doesn't have a $300 surprise on the Visa bill. It means I don't come home to a new automobile in the driveway that I don't like. I've had that experience. So I don't have to worry about her committing financial suicide for us. And having that, so that's one of those, she talked about the rails. The ties are the things that we talked about in what we call a one-couple retreat. We're going to talk in detail about that in a few minutes. But where we decided based on changes in our economic situation, well, we've always agreed to it, and those are important things to us. We've got short and long-term goals financially. These things are under constant review. We have business meetings. That's not, on the fly. We sit down and have a business meeting. We take a look at the checkbooks. We see how much this is costing us. How much is that? Should we be cutting back here? Is there some way that we can turn this thing into more of an asset? We talk about those things. She taught me to pray while I'm paying the bills. God, I'm grateful that I have the money to pay these bills. Ms. Linda says, God's got plenty of money. I think she might be right about that. We are self-supporting. We have both had major job changes on more than one occasion since we've been together. We have never approached them individually. We've always approached them prayerfully and together. And that's been important for us. If we're going to keep these rails going in the same direction, then we're going to have to make those decisions together. And the other thing is self-support means if I get it out, I put it back. It means if I mess it up, I clean it up. That's part of self-support. And these things are under constant review. Linda and I don't have a church. My home group is the most spiritual thing I've ever seen. We meet on Saturday and Sunday mornings at 10:30. And I've never heard tell of a church that touched what we do for spirituality. That's no offense to a church. That's just how it is for me. So we don't have a church, but we tithe. And what that means is we have the opportunity to creatively put money in places where we think God's will is being done. And I don't think I'm going to say any more about that, but if you haven't approached it in that angle, you might try it, see what happens. It's a really neat thing to sit down and have prayer about as to what does God want us to do with a portion of this money that we've dedicated to His service. It's been a great thing for us. Or do you want to talk about finance?
Yeah.
Is that it?
Okay. Great.
I did great.
Mm-hmm.
We got off to a slow start here. We're doing a little catch-up ball. Aid Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Non-professional means we don't give each other therapy. That's real important. We have been given a gift, and we get two handouts up here. If you're interested in them, we'll give them to you when we get finished. But on one of them, there is a conflict resolution technique based on the St. Francis prayer. It has to do with to understand and to be understood, to love and to be loved. And it's the hardest thing you'll ever do the first time. But it is such a fantastic thing. It's because when we get finished with it, I know that she has heard me and understands. And she knows that I have heard her and understand. And we were talking about this at a party a couple of years ago. And somebody said, well, when's the last time you used this thing? We said, well, it was about 10 days ago. We got into something. And one of us will say, I need to do the conflict resolution thing. Now, the other one can say, I can't do it now, but we'll do it today. I mean, somebody could be in an emergency. But we're going to do it before we go to bed tonight. So we sat down and we did this thing. And they said, how did it work? We said, well, it worked great. And I said, well, what was the spat about? I said, well, what was it about?
Didn't remember.
10 days later, and we don't remember what it was about. That's how thorough. This is an amazing process, and I promise you, it is the hardest thing you'll ever do the first time. And I would encourage you, if you take a read through that, we can talk about it. You're going to be easy to find for the rest of the weekend, but that thing is so, so important to us to be able to clean those up. And the only times we have been unable to get to the end using that has been when it's been old stuff for both of us at the same time. And we've been in the hands of a gifted therapist twice, I guess. And because we're both committed to, I'm not going into a therapist's office to win. I'm going to find out what I need to change. And she's going to find out what she needs to change. And with that attitude, you get the solution in one try, and we have each time. Great.
I'm just non-professional. I love that word, because what happened in my household was, after I got into this tradition, I realized there wasn't a professional way to load the dishwasher. My family members used to get a lot of grief because I wouldn't think they'd load the dishwasher properly. There's not a professional way to carry out the trash. It's just getting the job done. And once I let go of that control and thought everything had to be done the way I thought it had to be done, my household was a lot friendlier place to live. As far as special workers go, I really believe in that. I think young people need to get babysitters when they can. There's always somebody in a group that you can trust that needs the income. I think you need to take time out to play. I think you need to have professional help, like when you have to go to a counselor. I think you have to use the special workers in any way you can, but it means calling a sponsor or calling a sit-down, you know, saying, this is a family meeting. We need to go over some things like this. What happened for me, I was always having one daughter empty the dishwasher and one daughter take out the trash. Finally, they came to me after we'd been hanging around program a little while. They said, we don't like the duties that you assigned to us. I'd rather do this, this, and this. And the other daughter said, and I'd rather do this, this, and this. And isn't that when we get our commitments, maybe sometimes you'd rather be the treasurer, sometimes you'd rather be the chairperson, sometimes you'd rather do the coffee cups. You know, that's what, to me, the special workers mean. Find out what calls to you, then volunteer for that.
I'm going to put a couple more on this, too, that I missed in my notes. When we do get into disagreement, we never call names. You can't do that. Never call names.
That's stupid or...
Yeah, anything like that.
Yeah.
Can't do it. I think something else, too, is important is to get to the end. Because if you don't finish this one, then the next time you get something going, you got residue plus this, and the next time double residue, and eventually you got a nuclear war over broken shoelace. And that's why it's important, so that when we complete this thing using this technique, the next time something comes up, the only thing we have to deal with is what's immediately before us. Nobody's brown bagging. Nobody's hauling anything. The other thing is the word sarcasm comes from the Latin word meaning paring flesh. And the difference between humor and sarcasm, this is a gift from Ms. Linda, that there's a difference, because I grew up with sarcasm. There's a lot of sarcasm in the house that I grew up in. And as long as you weren't the one taking the hit, then you laughed. Right? And Linda says that it's humor if you're teasing somebody about something that they could fix in 10 minutes or less. And I think that, and my favorite example, we were at a trade show one time. I worked a lot of trade shows in the hotel. And I was wearing a coat and tie that day, and I was wearing two shoes, which could easily be different from a pair of shoes, say,
yeah.
For example. Like one could maybe be brown, one could possibly be black. It's possible. And it happened. And Linda told everybody I knew at that show that they needed to come see me in the one brown shoe and one black shoe. And it was funny. Because in 10 minutes, I could have gotten on the elevator and changed it. But if she teases me about my weight, it hurts. And that's the difference. If they can fix it in 10 minutes, you can tease them about it.
Tradition number 9, our groups as such ought never be organized, but they may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. I love that. If you ever see anyone trying to get in the circle to say the Lord's Prayer, you know that we aren't especially organized, you know. And the thing about never be organized, if you're not organized, that allows spontaneity to come into your life. You know, I was so organized that I would miss a rainbow. I was so organized that I would miss the sunset. I was so organized that I didn't realize that I had wild strawberries growing in my front yard. And if you stop and take a bite of them, they taste like rain. Until I got unorganized, which allowed me to stay in the moment. Because there's not anything that's going to happen to me right now in this moment that this loving God that we can't take care of. So it's okay to stay in this moment. As an Al-Anon, when I first got into, right before I got into recovery, and right when I first got into recovery, I literally had what I call brownouts. And I would be so obsessed thinking about, where is he? Who's he with? What's he doing? That two times I left my bank and I drove on the wrong side of the road. I became very British all of a sudden. And my 8-year-old daughter's looking over and said, Mom, she doesn't even know how to drive, but she said, Mom, I think we're going wrong here. Because I was thinking so much about him. Okay? So I had to lighten up and not be organized. I didn't, my thoughts, my actions are funnier. Fun things happen around us. That's, you know, fun things just happen if you're not so organized. And the other one is, committee directly responsible. If we've decided to have this budget about spending, I let go of it. I don't think about it anymore. If we've decided to go out of town for this weekend, I don't think about it anymore. If we decided to be with my family on Christmas, I don't think about it anymore. I let those committees do what they're supposed to do when the time comes. To me, that's what that tradition is about.
Part of it about also when we do some unusual things is we split up the chores. I wash dishes and do a pretty good bit of the cooking and grocery shopping. I like to do those things. She likes to mow grass. I'm a nice guy. I let her. As a matter of fact, I bought her a new lawnmower. And I had the guy at the store put it together for her. And I started for her. And those are important things for us. That we swap those things around a little bit, but we didn't set anything in stone. And I think that's important. Ken says, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues since the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. In part, that means that I don't plan anything for us. That's really important. I've had the experience of coming home from a hard week on the road and hitting the house about 6 o'clock and being told to shower and shave and put on a suit or going out to dinner with some people you don't like. So I don't plan for us. She doesn't plan for us. We agreed to things. Hey, you know, that sounds pretty interesting. I'll check the calendar and talk to my wife and get back to you, is as far as I'm willing to go with somebody. Or to say, yeah, I'll be there. I don't know whether Linda was going to want to come or not. I'll talk to her, or you can. But it's important that we don't commit each other to things. I never say anything negative about my wife to anybody, ever, with a few exceptions. She's one of them. If I have something negative about her, I can take it to her. I can also take it to this therapist. Or I could take it to my sponsor, although I'm tired of him saying, now, what was it that you did that made her do something like that? If I want to hear that again, I can take it to my sponsor. Linda also had a problem. There was a girl at my home. You know, not all the sharks are men. And there was a woman at my home group that my wife was concerned about. And she asked me if I would please, instead of hugging this woman, I'm kind of huggy, would you start shaking her hand? And I said, okay, I'll be glad to do that. Now, if she felt I have to do that with all of them, I think we have another problem to deal with. But she said this particular one, and I thought about it. I think, you know, I think she might be right. So I started doing that. It wasn't too long after that she picked another one and said, would you do it with that one? And I said, okay, I will, but I think you're wrong about this one. She came to me a few months later and said, I was wrong about the second one. But I'm a whole lot more interested in her being comfortable with my behavior than whether this woman is concerned about whether I'm shaking her hand or not. I can't allow myself to be bothered about that. And this, for me, is one of the great truths. If there's something that's actually right for me, it's also not wrong for anyone else. They may not like it, but it isn't wrong for them. I stopped financing the party for my daughter. She didn't like it. It was right for me. It was also right for her. And it's always that way.
Think about public controversy. I always thought that volume was the voice of reason. I can get pretty loud, and I can tell it one more time a little bit louder. And what I know is that I have to listen to my own voice. If it's getting louder and it's getting more intense, something's really going on, and it's always with me. So not only do other people have to listen to my voice and the volume of it, I have to listen to it myself. And we don't display, we might hug or hold hands in public, but we don't argue in public, and we don't over-love in public either. We try to be appropriate adults. I guess the one thing that Al-Anon has taught me is that all of my ages, my spiritual age, my physical age, my emotional age, finally all showed up at the same place at the same time. You know, I'm now age appropriate. I'm going to be a 60-year-old woman that's enjoying life, thanks to Al-Anon. So we don't really believe in public controversy of any kind. And this is also how we started working out our own communication comes under this. There are times that we're over at my parents' house, and because Scott is the son-in-law, he gets ready to go, but it's not appropriate for him to say, hey, I'm ready to get out of here. And they're my parents, and so he gives me a signal. It's a signal that we've worked out ahead of time. He gives me that signal, and I'm going, oh, I didn't realize it's getting so late. Why don't we need to go? Because my parents can understand that coming from me when it would be a little difficult coming from Scott. After his meeting, a lot of times they have the meeting before the meeting, they have the meeting, then they have the meeting after the meeting, and then they want to go to lunch, and then they want to go to a movie, and pretty soon we're having let's spend the night slumber party for 3 days. And sometimes that's enough. And so when we're standing around 3, 4, 5, 6 people, and they're saying, hey, how about if we go to a movie? And Scott looks at me, and I can give him a signal. Yes, that's okay with me. No, I really want to get home and spend time doing something else. Or if I really don't care, I've got 3 signals I can give to him. So I don't look like the bad Al-Anon saying, hey, no, let's get out of here. See, these are things that we've worked out ahead of time. Remember how Carol Burnett used to pull her ear to say hello to her grandmother? That's not one of our signals.
I have actually given all 3 of those signals since she started telling that. They're real simple things, but they're important to us so that we can stay together. This is about unity. And I'd like to go out with these guys from my home group, but if she doesn't want to go, then I don't want to go. Because she's important to me. I've chosen her. I need to continue to honor that. I'll always have a great time with her. But they're simple things, and we practice them enough so that we can do them. And the one we use the most often is, I'm ready to get out of here. We use it at her parents' house and a number of other places.
Okay, number 11. Our public relation policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, TV, and films. We need guard with special care the anonymity of all AA members. I think that they put TV in here so that we can decide who is supposed to control the remote.
Now, I'll tell you right now, ladies, you've been wondering what the guy's doing with the remote. It isn't to find out what's on TV. It's to find out what else is on TV. Mm-hmm. That's why we have to have the remote.
Mm-hmm. But I love this, the care of anonymity of all AA members. You know, I go to Al-Anon because I qualify. My dad is still an active drinker, so I grew up around alcoholism. I qualify. I marry men that are, by their own admission, are alcoholics, and I divorce them, and then I marry another one, and I divorce him. I'm married to a recovering alcoholic, so I qualify for Al-Anon. I give birth to alcoholics, okay? That's why I qualify. But it's very important that I keep that within the rooms of these meetings. I don't wear that badge of, oh, I've got these alcoholic relatives, I've got problems here, problems there. I don't take it outside that. That's keeping me in the problem. I like to stay in solution. Solution is a positive thing that moves us forward.
Manipulation is trying to get someone to do something without asking them. It's naming a problem and then standing back and hoping somebody else will fix it. We don't do that. It's important for me that I can ask her for what I'd like to have. It's also important that I'm very comfortable getting no for an answer. Because the fact is, I rarely get no for an answer. And all of my needs, and to the best of my knowledge, all of my wants are being taken care of. I don't have any holes here. So all of a sudden, if I think, gee, we got Tuesday afternoon off, we should go fish, and she says, no, I can't, I'm okay with that. Because everything else is filled. And that's important. We're coming to talking about how we got to that part. I want to tell you too, and I tell this when I tell my story, I have a sign on my desk. And the sign says, Ask Linda. And the reason I have it is because her Al-Anon program is so powerful that if I want to know what she thinks about something I'm fixing to say or do, I have to ask her. Because I'm not on her caseload. I'm not a husband in training. And I appreciate that very much. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you how strong her Al-Anon program is. She never, unless I ask her to, helps me find a parking place. I may impress some of you, even if you're not laughing. I guarantee you right now, I couldn't believe that. That was just so powerful.
You want a telecommunication story? Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead.
It's just a 12-year.
Yeah. Anonymity, the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Anonymity, in part, is doing good for something good for someone and not getting caught. That's a large part of what anonymity is really about. It's about doing good stuff and not getting caught. And to do it within the relationship. So you guys who don't like chick flicks, ask her to go to a chick flick sometime. Yeah. It's not that hard. No, it really isn't. She does those things. I'm going to tell this tomorrow in my story, but I have to tell it. I was sitting watching the U.S. Open golf tournament. My wife was sitting spending time with her husband. That's what I'm talking about. And we do it with the sound off because you get an idea how clever she is. You don't have any guess yet. And so we're having sort of chatting, and there's this Orient Japanese fellow who's in contention. He was maybe in the lead or a stroke off the lead. He hits this particularly bad shot. The camera comes in tight on his face. You can see this guy is just in anguish. And Linda says, "Oh, I hope he doesn't commit karaoke." I hope so, too. I've been there when people have committed karaoke.
We're missing our chance right now, I understand.
Yeah, that's right. But so this thing about doing something nice for someone and not getting caught, look around for a chance to do that. When we're going to be apart for any period of time, which is to say overnight, I always hide greeting cards. And if it's going to be four nights, there'll be four greeting cards. Linda likes $2 bills. I don't know why. So I hide them. She found one in the refrigerator the other day when I was on the road. I was out for a weekend. And little things like that. What they really say is, "I was thinking of you when you weren't here." Little things that on Mother's Day, on her birthday, on her anniversary, on Valentine's Day, she gets cards all day long. She gets them all day long, 6 or 8, 10 of them. She deserves them. And that's part of doing something nice for someone. And it's a wonderful thing. And complimenting each other all the time is just such fun. It feels so good. I guess I'll tell the boy fishing story. We've got a couple of minutes left. Go ahead.
Okay. I wanted to tell a little bit about the spiritual foundation.
Go for it.
Scott says he thanks me for doing his laundry. I love doing the laundry because that's clothes that are going to be against his skin all day. So as I'm folding the clothes, I put a little blessing in them. You know, it's just a nice thing to know. The spiritual foundation, we've already said that we keep God first, our program second, and we're in third place. And sometimes that gets moved. 4 years ago, our daughter, we call our children, we have four children together. Our daughter, our oldest daughter, was pregnant with the twins, and it was a difficult pregnancy. The last 4 months of that pregnancy, she had to be on bed rest. I mean total bed rest. So as a family, which meant her husband, the daughter, my youngest daughter was still living there in an apartment there with our property, we sat down, and as a family, we had a family meeting, what was the best way to take care of her on this bed rest. So they moved in with us. All of a sudden, Scott's not in third place. She is. I'm cooking 3 meals a day, 3 snacks, taking them back there, taking her to the doctor. I say I was obviously in an Al-Anon slip because I was shaving her legs more often than my own. That usually goes well at women's conferences. but we tried to have a spiritual foundation for our family during that time. And we got those babies here healthy, and we got that daughter here healthy. And we celebrated that. And we got so intense on just doing the everyday things that one day I said, "Time out, we're not having any fun. Friday night is going to be Trivial Pursuit." Scott asked some of the guys he sponsored. About 20 of us crammed into the bedroom, and we had a battle of the sexes of Trivial Pursuit. It was hilarious. And the other thing about this is practicing principles above personalities. If I have any trouble of my thinking, I can come back to these principles. We don't have to argue about the principles. They're right there in front of us. So I don't have to be right or wrong. I have to just use this little cheat sheet to know what's going on in our life and what things work and what things don't work.
Talking about never being higher than third, I've had major business emergencies since we've been together. And suddenly the business became more important than she did, and she moved down to fourth. And she supported me in that.
and didn't walk around moping, and I didn't have to keep saying, what's wrong, and she's late talking, and all that kind of stuff. And part of the reason that that worked is because we had all this other stuff together. I'm going to go ahead and talk about a concept that Linda came up with called a one-couple retreat. And it's a working retreat. When we did our first one, we planned it for about 6 months. We'd take 2 hours on a Tuesday night, and we would plan it for about 6 months and talk about the things that we were going to talk about. And we came up with a series of categories that we thought we ought to address. And then we planned venues. And we planned this whole, we assigned chair people. And the chairperson, like any chairperson, responsible for starting and stopping on time, keeping us on topic and making notes. And I said we planned this thing in depth. I'm going to talk about it a little bit more. I got a handout on this. And then we dropped off the planet. We left on a Thursday afternoon. Everybody we sponsored, all the family members knew that the youngest daughter had the phone number where we were, and they could call if it was an emergency. Allow us to define emergency for you. An emergency is when there's blood on the floor and you have already dialed 911. Then you can call us. Short of that is not an emergency, don't call. We grocery shopped on the way in. There's a wonderful motel about 90 miles from Nashville. It's got these big cabins. It's got a big two-man jacuzzi. It's a full kitchen. And we dropped off the planet. And we talked about retirement. We talked about long and short-term spending goals. We set the spending limits that we talked about a couple of minutes ago. We talked about businesses. We talked about every family member, everyone. And as we collected these, we talked about toys. The toys were things like boats and airplanes, like big ones. And as we selected topics, we said, okay, this will be an easy one to talk about. This one could be tough, so we could make them adjacent. Let's don't put two tough ones together. And we planned the schedule on this thing. We took a big chart in there to keep notes on, because we had a plan 90, 120 days later to review the notes to see if we'd made the changes we said and to remember the things that we had done. And we talked about sex. She talked about what it was like for a girl to go through puberty. I had no idea. I was interested. I'd always been, but and we talked about likes and dislikes. We talked about trust. We talked about our own deaths. I talked to her about what it would feel like to me to get the news that she had just died. And I cried. It touched me to the depth of soul. I have not ever been touched that before or since. And she held me while I cried on that. And we talked about extended illnesses. So we're both getting some mild illness. And what we could expect from the other one if that happened. We talked about a recovery program. We talked about spirituality. We talked about our beliefs. We talked about meditation. I'll give you the list. It's long. And it was a fabulous experience. And we drove away from there, and I have never been closer to a human being in my life. The rails were parallel. They looked like they touched because we had the shared vision, and the ties were in place, and we knew what they were, and we were committed to them. Fabulous experience. I lost my job in March. I'm a commission sales rep in a little company I've been repping for a long time. Got purchased by a big company, and I already had a guy in my territory. They were paying about a third what I was buying. I know that's the easiest decision that CEO made this year. And so Linda said, we need to do another one, and we did. And we didn't do the in-depth planning we did on this one, but we dropped off the planet for a couple of days, and we did prayer and meditation, and we came up with a shared vision again on where we're going to go. That was in the first week in April, and we could only see to the 1st of May at that point. And we had another short one at that point based on things that have happened in between, and we're in a transition period, we think, right now, and yet the rails are still parallel, and they touch in the distance, and the ties are still connected. The fabulous experience, that is a handout. On the back of it is a conflict resolution technique I talked about that's based on the St. Francis prayer. The other handout that we have is two pages of understandings that we have come up with. The ties I talk about, these are the things, we're not recommending these, we're just saying this is an edited version of what we've agreed to. We give you a kind of a template if that interests you. So that's something that's meant a lot to us, because we know where we are because we've talked about it.
Okay.
Yeah, closer.
The thing about using the steps, using the traditions, using all the tools that we have in recovery are that we have choices. Before I got into Al-Anon, I didn't think I had a choice to say yes. I didn't think I had a choice to say no. I thought I had to always do my assignment, what you wanted me to be, that's what I would be doing. So as a result of working the steps and using these traditions, I realized that I have choices. And I also realized that I have amnesia. So to help me remember that I have choices, because you had a choice, a lot of choices tonight, whether or not you came here or you went and committed karaoke. I mean, you know, you had some of those choices tonight. So there's a story that we like to close with, and long ago in this village there was a wise old man, and everybody loved him and thought he was wonderful. And there was a young boy in this village, and this young boy had an attitude. He was jealous of the old man, and he wanted to always trip him up. So the young boy came up with this plan, and the plan was this. The boy was going to catch a baby bird, and he was going to put the bird behind his back, and he was going to go to the old man and ask the old man if the bird was dead or alive. And if the old man said, well, son, that bird is alive, well, the boy was going to squash and kill the baby bird behind his back and then show the old man the dead bird. Or if the old man said, well, son, that bird is dead, well, the boy was going to go, ha-ha, and show him the live bird. It was a great plan. So the young boy caught the bird. They called everybody in the village to come and watch, and he put the bird behind his back, and he says, okay, old man, you are so all-knowing. You tell me whether or not this bird is dead or alive. And the old man said, the choice is yours. So if you're ever at that crossroad as to whether or not you should call your sponsor or go to a meeting or sit down and talk to your primary relationship partner, the choice is yours. And it isn't so scary. And thank you for staying up and sharing this time with us. And we'll stay around and hang out, but I think Rusty wants to go to bed too.
Thank you.
God bless.